time to thrive. Welcome to the Thriveology Podcast with Dr. Lee Bockham. Join us as we explore ways that you can thrive in your life, regardless of what life throws at you. It's your life. Time to live it.
Hey, Thrivers, this is Lee Bockham, and you are with us on the Thriveology Podcast. This is the podcast about how to thrive more in life. It's a way for me to have a conversation with myself and with you about how to thrive more. As I've said many times, I am a full-time thriveologist. I've spent almost a quarter of a century as a professional studying how to thrive. Now, that doesn't mean I always apply it to myself, but it always means I'm trying to find better ways of thriving in my life. And so part of this is a conversation about how I'm working to thrive in my life as you're continuing to work to thrive in your life. And today I want to talk something that haunts all of us, and that's regret, living a life of regret. And here's the thing. We all have it. Everybody has regrets in life. The question is what we do about those regrets. Do we live stuck in those regrets, or do we find some way of moving beyond them? Because a regret, I think, is just a fact of life that either will dominate us or we leave behind us. You see, sometimes we have these senses of regret, feelings of regret, and those feelings are quite accurate. You know, it's based on something that really happened back there, and sometimes there is inaccuracy in our regrets. Sometimes we blame ourselves too much for things that happened. Sometimes we look back and we're always looking for that piece of what did I do? What did I do that caused that? And sometimes we didn't cause it. You know, sometimes just some bad things happen. One of the things I was listening to the other day is Tim Ferriss was talking. Tim Ferriss is, if you're not familiar, is the guy off the 4-hour work week, and is somebody who really has brought a lot of different philosophies into my life on how to be productive in my work life. Not that I do a 4-hour work week, but at least gave me some framework on how to deal with that. More than that, his book, The 4-Hour Body, is where I set the place where I really took control of my physical life. You know, I really knew that I had gotten away from caring for myself. I'd done a lot of the psychological self-care and a lot of working on other areas of my professional life. But my physical body that I carried around, I wasn't as much aware until there was a breakdown, until I got sick. And at that point, one of the things I found was Tim Ferriss's 4-hour work week and 4-hour body. And it really kind of did a reset for me. Helped me lose a lot of weight. And so I'm a guy who likes to listen to Tim to see what else he's saying. And what he said the other day that really caught my attention is that regret is really retroactive decision making. It's retroactive decision making. It's looking back on something and trying to remake those decisions that have already happened. Now, he was talking about this as in a productivity kind of capacity of how do you make life more productive by not getting caught up in too many choices and not living in what's already happened. But I want you to just to think about how that's true for all regrets, that all regrets are us trying to redo the decisions that were made along the way. Whether those decisions were around business or relationships or opportunities or actions, we always think back on what we might be able to do differently. Now, you know, this has been a learning piece for me. As I said, we all have regrets, and I've thought many times about some places in my life where I could have regret or I could do something different. Number of years ago, I was a therapist, working as a therapist and struggling to try to figure out how you get beyond the therapy pay scale. Because just like every professional knows, if you're a professional, at some point you become an hourly employee. You might make more per hour than other people, but at some point you're being paid per the hour of service. So as a therapist, my number of hours was capped in a week. How effective I could be in a day or in a week began to reduce when I went over a certain level. And so I knew that my basic income level was capped, and I'd been looking for opportunities. And one opportunity was a business opportunity that I saw, and I think really was a business opportunity, but it wasn't my business opportunity. My wife and I talked about it. I got really interested in it, and I bought into it. You know, this was one of those where somebody else had figured out how to do the business and they were willing to sell their knowledge so we could do it in non-competitive spaces. So I paid a lot of money. In fact, we went into substantial debt to do the startup. And that substantial debt carried us through. I had some working capital. You know, I knew enough to get the working capital and try to work it through. The problem was that at some point I realized that there was a piece of the equation, two pieces of the equation that didn't work. One is my heart wasn't in that business. And that was a big one. The other was that I was dependent on other people to help me make this successful. And there was another problem. When those other people could make decisions that blocked my capacity of moving forward, my destiny was really in their hands. And eventually, I finally got to the point where I was bleeding money so fast without any income at all that we had to say, this isn't going to work. And for one of those painful experiences in life, I had to back away from it. And for a while, it really hurt. I remember every month I would write that check on the loan and I would send it off going, man, if I hadn't done that, I wouldn't have done this to my family. It was a huge amount of regret. It was a very painful experience that one day I realized had basically given me a crash course in business. Now, I had always had my hands in some business. When I was a teenager, I did magic shows and got paid fairly well for that. And I also, as a teenager, had the opportunity of really helping out and running a clothing store and then a restaurant for some owners who were basically burned out. And so I got to do a lot more of the ins and outs than I might normally have for a 16, 17, 18, 19-year-old kid. And I had lots of opportunities to develop some business skills, but boy, this put me into business learning 101, and it was an advanced crash course in understanding what happens in a business. So one day I realized that the regret was gone, that I didn't regret making that decision. It was a hugely expensive decision and a hugely painful decision, but I had paid my money in to learn something from it. The regret had gone somewhere else. Now, what that made me think about later on is the fact that there is always that capacity of either being captured by regret or doing something different. So let me just talk through a couple of pieces that can happen in life. First, sometimes just as the bumper sticker says, but I'm going to say it nicely here, you know, crap happens. Doo-doo occurs. Bad things just come up and mess up your plans. And that happens to all of us, whether it's a change in the economics, a change in the weather patterns, a change in the people around us, illness, death. Something happens and it screws up our plans and we had nothing to do with it directly. We might not have seen it coming, and maybe we should have seen it coming. That's sometimes true with relationships, but sometimes just bad stuff happens in life. That was one of those really heartfelt lessons I learned when I was a chaplain in a hospital and watching people struggling through, whether it was a tragic accident or a tragic illness or just a chronic illness that they struggled through, was that sometimes things were beyond your control and really beyond the control of anyone. The doctors couldn't do anything about it. You couldn't do anything about it yourself. Your family couldn't have changed it. And those are just life events. The nice thing is when it's a life event like that, it's sometimes easier to say, okay, you know, I'm not going to live in regret with that because I had nothing to do with that. Now, it can sneak in, right? I mean, we can always kind of go to that self-blame place. But crap is just going to happen in life. And so we set that as kind of a standard beginning point, that crap is just going to happen and we're going to have to deal with it. But there are other times. The other times is when we get in our own way, when we trip ourselves up. And here's the thing I really want you to hear. We all do that. Every single person has the points when we get in our own way. It's just human nature. It's just the way things are. Now, you look around at somebody who's highly successful, and I'll promise you that in their background is a story that's not about success. That many times, and I've met a lot of entrepreneurs that I've talked to who have gone from the heights of success to the depths of failure, back to the heights of success. And one of the places that I recognized is often the trigger to get back up and going was to be able to leave the regret behind. Not to shut it off and pretend like that never happened, but to leave the regret piece of it behind. Sometimes we don't do things because of fear. Fear can break us down and freeze us up. Sometimes we don't take action when we know we should for lots of other reasons, but when we boil it down, it's often about fear. We're afraid our idea won't work out, or we're afraid that somebody's going to look at us funny, or we're afraid to not to do something for the wrong reasons. And I will tell you, when I look back on that business, it was a good opportunity for somebody. It was not a good opportunity for me. It did not feed my passions. It did not fit into the way I understand the world. It was just a good opportunity. And it was one of those points when I realized that just because it was a good opportunity didn't mean I needed to be involved. That sometimes there are opportunities that can be great for somebody else, but they're not our cup of tea. So we sometimes also tend to break our standards or our boundaries. And really, in some ways, when I look back on that, I was in some ways breaking my own standard, because I had always pursued a life of doing things that brought me meaning and purpose. And then I chose to chase a business that brought me neither meaning nor purpose. Now, I kept trying to work it through my head and make it fit. I was trying to make it fit into my standards. And in some ways, I could make it fit. The higher points of that, I could make it fit. But there was so much to it that did not fit. It wasn't that I was breaking my own morals, but it wasn't living into what I expected of myself. So it wasn't meeting my standards. So we all have these standards. Our standards are what we expect of ourselves. And we don't live perfectly into them. For instance, people often have a standard that they want to be honest with people. They don't want to be lying to people. And then they find that they are telling fibs, or they're lying in order to not get in trouble, or they're, you know, trying to calm things down by not being completely truthful. And when we do that, we've relaxed our standards. What caused that? Fear. Fear causes us to break our standards. Fear also often causes us to let go of our boundaries. Now, boundaries are what you will not let someone do to you. Now, notice those two pieces. What you expect of yourself and what you won't let others do to you often will encompass the two areas of regret. That we might do something that we later go, wow, you know what, that really didn't fit for me. Whether it's the level of just not fitting into our standards, or whether it really is a moral place for us, that we actually broke our moral code. And usually when we break our moral code, we feel that sense of guilt. We feel that sense of regret. And we're going to talk about what do you do about that in just a few minutes. Sometimes it's about what we let someone, how we let someone treat us. You know, we get into a relationship and the relationship is not healthy. We let someone mistreat us, and then we live with regret about how we let that happen. So we can often look at those two pieces, the boundaries and the standards, and realize that when we allow those to be violated, we set the stage for us to then have regret. The interesting thing about it is regret is a really poor friend. It pretends to be a good friend, right? Haunts us all the time, but it's not really a good friend. You know, when I heard myself saying some things to myself about what had happened, what I realized is if anybody had said that to me as a friend, they would no longer be my friend. It wasn't just somebody kind of pointing out what I might have learned from it or I could have done better, but how I chastised myself, how I constantly fussed at myself for losing money, for making a bad decision, for not really putting in all my effort. And by the way, looking back, I really did. I did everything that I knew how to do. Could I have done more? Sure. But at the point, was I doing everything I could do? Yes. And yet, my little inner voice, that little dialogue with yourself that talks to you in not so nice ways sometimes, was telling me I had failed, that I was no good, that I had somehow let everybody else down. That's the voice of regret that pretends to be a good friend, but is really a horrible friend. You see, I have another theory. And that theory is one that I've always relied on. My belief is that we're all doing the best we can where we are right then, not where we could be. This is not about optimal performance. Am I doing the best I can in life, period? No, it's about doing the best you can where you are. It's about being able to say, how am I going to be accepting of myself? And I've noticed, you know, over the years of listening to people come in my office that in the end, when we really boil it down, nobody's ever come into my office and said, you know, I'm really just kind of farting around. I'm just not doing much. I'm not living up to what I could. Now, those aren't people living optimal lives. Understand that this is not about optimal performance. It's about being and doing the best we can where we are at that moment. So sometimes people take bad actions, but as a reflection of where they are at that point. Sometimes people don't live up to the expectations of themselves, but it's usually due to the fact that they are at a place themselves that they're not capable of that, that something's got them stuck, something's in their way. And so we tend to act as if we didn't do the best we could given where we are, but that's rarely the case. That's where that inaccuracy of regret lies. When we look back and go, wow, I should have done better than that. Not that there's any reason we should have done better than that, just a kind of a belief. When I look back on some of the areas of my regret, I can still see that where it comes from is a new understanding. And that's one of the basis of regret, that we gain a new understanding of life, of ourselves, of other people, of some piece that changes how we view things. And when we get that new view, then we look back and we start retroactively looking at our decisions along the way, building the regret as we went. And so I've talked to people, for instance, who have had failed relationships, failed marriages, and are crushed by that. And when they look back, they can look at lots of places to feel bad about. But at each of those places, they were still doing the best they could, given the information they had, given where they were in life, given the understandings they had of life. They were doing the best they could. And yet, they used the current knowledge to chastise themselves for what was true. You know, it's kind of like if we were back in the days when there was a belief that the world was flat, and then one day everybody says, oh no, the world's round and we're going around the sun. And it would be hard to look back on the days before and go, wow, you know, what was I thinking? Bad me. That was horrible of me to believe that the world was ever flat. You could say, huh, we really misread that. We really didn't have the information we needed to understand that differently. But it would be hard to live in regret of decisions made with the information we had then versus the information we have now. That's the nature of regret, of looking back and taking what we understand now and shoving it on to those pieces of actions. We look back and we say, wow, you know what? I wish I had done this, but the ability to see doing this is based on a new understanding of where we are now. My father always used to say that hindsight's 20/20. And that's a wonderful way of phrasing what gets us into trouble in regret. Hindsight's 20/20, but foresight is never 20/20, and present sight's rarely 20/20. You know, we're able to see better, more clearly in the rearview mirror than we are able to see forward and around us at any point. And yet, that's not how life goes. So what are those five actions where you can go from a life of regret to a life reset? Let's go through those five actions. The first one is to take responsibility. Now, I want to be clear here. I've said this so many times that I believe that people need to claim being 100% responsible for life, for their own life, 100% responsible, not 100% to blame, not 100% in control, but 100% responsible. When we break down that word responsible, it's the ability to respond, able to respond, responsible. And when we choose how we're going to respond, then we begin to change the equation. Imagine that you're in a burning house, a burning building, and you're wondering who caused that. Well, the wrong time and the wrong place to be asking that question. who calls this is not in the moment when you're in the flames. That's when you get out, and that's when you get other people out. That's when you take responsibility. You're able to respond to the situation and get yourself out and get others clear. At some point, somebody may assign some blame, but that's not necessarily a part of the useful equation. But to say, what do I do now? How can I be responsible for what happens in my life? For instance, you may look back with regret that you are in a certain relationship. And so you can take responsibility to decide whether to end that relationship or to change that relationship. The regret only keeps you feeling bad about the relationship and only feel bad about getting into the relationship. Or maybe you got out of a relationship for the wrong reasons at some point in the past, and you could take responsibility and say, you know what? I'm going to go back and apologize for that. I'm going to go back and be responsible for saying, you know what? I ended that poorly, or I ended that for the wrong reasons, and I am so sorry for the effect of that. So we can begin to be responsible for the things that we look back on. Now, that doesn't mean we can rewrite that script. Those things happened. And to be able to say they've happened is important. But the first step is to say, I'm going to be responsible for where I am, for the actions I took. One of the ways that I did that with my own failed business was every month when I wrote that check, I was taking responsibility for my actions back there. But I also was sitting down and saying, how can I make sure that does not happen again? What are the lessons I need to learn? Okay, so related to taking responsibility is number two, to take action where necessary. That was writing that check. It was necessary for me to clear that out, to move beyond it, to get beyond it. Taking action where necessary may mean that you now end a relationship that is not going to work, or you now decide to change it. You learn something new and change that relationship so it will work. Or you take action to go back and apologize for some place that you might have hurt someone. A number of years ago, I've already said that I was a magician in my youth, and I've told that story a number of times. And when I say a youth, you know, I started doing magic shows on stages when I was 13. It's pretty young. In fact, obviously could not drive, had to have someone drive me around. Well, there were these magic conventions that went on. And at the magic conventions, you know, I would be often the youngest one, in the group. And so sometimes I would get a ride with another magician to these groups, and I would even stay with them. This was when I was probably 14, 15, 16 years old, and I would stay with them out of town. And a lot of them took me under their wings and really helped me to develop as a magician. And one of those was a local magician, and he and I connected up, and he's a great guy with one problem. He was an alcoholic. I just didn't know it back then. And so what I did know, though, was that when we got away, when he started drinking, when we got to these events, and would often end up sleeping away most of the event. Well, in the meantime, and that was okay with me because I was out meeting other people and doing my thing at the convention. Well, years later, when I was in graduate school, I received a letter from him. And the letter was him taking action and taking responsibility for what happened. He'd gotten into recovery, and he was writing me as part of his 12-step program. And notice the 12-step program is one of those excellent ways of getting away from regret and closing down and yet taking responsibility for what's happened and moving forward. So he was in a 12-step program, and he was deciding to take responsibility for what had happened then, for the fact that he was in some ways responsible for a 15-year-old boy and was drunk most of that weekend. Now, it didn't really affect me, you know, but I was, in fact, was a little surprised when I got the letter and I read it and responded to the letter saying, you know, it's no problem. I'm glad that you got in recovery, but I'm not scarred by it. In fact, you know, while he was passed out, I was out meeting other people and having a good time. So it didn't really affect me. And yet what I was realizing was he was dealing with his regret. He was dealing with taking action where necessary. By writing that apology letter was him taking necessary actions in his mind to take responsibility for his life. So notice those two, how they get connected together, to take responsibility and to take action where necessary. You can't take the action necessary until you decide to take responsibility. Again, responsibility is not blame. It's deciding on how you can respond. It's the ability to respond differently. And it's a taking responsibility goes backward and forward. It goes back to how do I need to be responsible for what happened back there and forward to how do I need to be responsible in life going forward, which leads us to step number three, to focus on where you want to be, not where you've been. Focus on where you want to be, not where you've been. I believe that life is lived in one direction with no gaps. What I mean by that is that life is lived forward, but only in the period immediately around us. You know, if we live life in the past, we get trapped by what's already happened and can't be changed. If we live it too far in the future, we live in a place of anxiety and fear. So life is always lived forward through time, but with no gaps in it. And so we want to focus on where we want to be. Where do we want to be? Not in 10 years and how do I dig out of the hole, but where do we want to be in a month, in 3 months? And then we begin to build out the path, not with a gap in it, but the path that continues us out. And so I always recommend that people write down kind of a statement of where you want to be. What does life need to look like for you, for it to be an ideal kind of life? Now, notice when you think about that, how your fear crops up. Whenever I say to somebody, write down your ideal life, they're resistant to do it for one central reason. They don't think they can get that ideal life. That's not the point of the conversation. The conversation is about creating a target, of saying, this is where I want to move to, not this is where I've moved from. We often don't choose those events in life that have already happened, but we can choose the direction we want to go in the future. We don't choose our starting point. We don't choose our parents. We don't choose our siblings. We don't choose our socioeconomic conditions. We don't choose a lot of what happens back there, or more clearly, what happened back there. And we can't be completely choosing everything in our future, but if we were able to choose our target, what would we head towards? What this does is it reorients us away from what's already happened and puts us towards what we could become. It allows us to leave behind and move forward what's already happened. Now, let's add step number four, is to glean the learning and then let the event go. That was one of the big lessons for me when my business failed. I had to learn the lessons, and I learned a lot of lessons about what I wanted to be involved in and how I wanted to work through life, how I wanted to be in life, how I wanted to create a new place of moving forward. So I learned a lot. I look back on those lessons about business and about who I am and about what I wanted my life to be about and how it needed to be focused on something of making an impact in the world. Then I had to let it go. Now, it took a while to let it go. It took 5 years of paying off that loan every month to let it go. But as I was able to learn from it, I realized that each month that check was a reminder of the lessons I learned, not the painful event, but the reminder of the lessons learned. So we can learn from those experiences, whether it's learning how to prevent them from happening again or just learning how we persevere. You know, one of the big things we recognize in life is that, you know, we do persevere, that people do get through pretty tough stuff and persevere to move forward to a new existence. And we got to let it go. We got to let go of the pain of that, the hurt of that, the difficulties of it, and hold on. So there are two pieces to that. One is the learning piece and the other is the painful piece, the emotional hurts and pains and difficulties. We want to hold on to the learning. And we can always learn from where we've been. I was watching an interview, I believe it was on Oprah, a number of years back with Madonna. And I think it was Oprah said to her, you know, I'm curious on if there are some things that you regret in life, the things that you would do differently if you had to do it over again. And she said, I don't. And everybody was kind of shocked in the audience. I mean, you know, Madonna has done some things that some of us might go, wow, what were you thinking? Instead, Madonna said, all of the things that have happened to me and all the things I've done have made me who I am now, and I like who I am. So if I were to go back and redo them, I would not be that person now. That doesn't mean if she were back in those moments that she would do it again. It just means that she's taken the learning and she's moved on. When I was a chaplain, I worked with lots of people who were chronically in our oncology unit. They had cancer and it brought them back over and over again. And the interesting thing is many of them would tell me that how thankful they were for having gotten sick. And then they would say, now I wouldn't ask for it again. And if I had a choice, I wouldn't do it again. But you know what? This really woke me up. This brought me a new level of life and existence. They had learned to glean the learning from the experience and then leave it behind. And that can be a very difficult thing to do. But we all have things we can learn from those painful events in life, which brings us to the last step, which is to practice forgiveness and move on. Forgiveness is one of those misunderstood things. We have gotten to the place where we think forgiveness is somehow for the other person that did us wrong, or maybe even, you know, it's for that part of us that did something wrong, and it's about that. Instead, it's so we're not carrying all those wounds around, whether they're self-inflicted or other-inflicted, so that we can let those wounds go. And so forgiveness is an action of the self, of releasing those pieces and moving forward. It's being able to acknowledge that you can learn and that you can let the hurt go. Okay, so let's go through those five ways to escape regret. The first one is to take responsibility. And then the second one is to take action where necessary, to look and go, where can I fix what needs to be fixed? And after I've done that, I've got to let go of the rest. So you focus on where you want to be. What's the next place in the future? Where do you want to move to? Life is always lived in one direction with no gaps, or you get into trouble. Many of us live way out in the future or way in the past, leaving us with depression and regret and anxiety if we live too far in the future. But if we live it in that one direction, forward looking, with no gaps, no big jumps to what might happen out there, then we live life fully. And then we can look at those places of pain and say, what did I learn? How can I cement that down as I move forward and let it go? Which is step number four, glean the learning and let it go. And step number five is to practice forgiveness, recognizing that it's a loaded term, but practice forgiveness, meaning I'm going to let go of that. I'm going to let go of the pain. I'm going to let others off the hook. I'm going to let myself off the hook, and I'm going to move on. So if I'm to boil that down, it means that we change what can be changed. We accept the rest of life. That sounds a lot like a serenity prayer, right? We learn from it, and then we refocus and choose our goal that more fits where we want life to be. That's the way we do a life reset instead of being caught by a life of regret. Okay, I hope you found that helpful. I hope that gave you some places of changing how you view where your life is and maybe even gave you permission to let go of the regret. Now, let me ask you to do something for me. If you could just spread the word about this, maybe somebody else could be freed from their regrets. Maybe somebody else can find a different way. And some ways you can do that is if you're listening to this on iTunes, just leave a review on iTunes. Give us a rating. Leave a review. Whatever you want to say, let us know. I always look to see what those comments are so that I know what's making sense and what's working for you. So please do that. Also, you can show us a little Twitter love if you're a tweet person, if you're a Twitter person, you want to send out a tweet. It's real easy. Just in your browser, just type in thriveology.com. That's thriveology.com, thriveology.com/love. And if you do that, that's thriveology.com/love. It's going to pre-populate your Twitter feed with a tweet that'll just say you like this and how people can find it. And that would be two great ways of helping us spread the word about this so other people can learn to thrive in this. The other thing I'm always curious about is what you would like to hear about. This podcast is a conversation, and I want to know how that conversation is happening on your end. So you can leave a comment in the comments area of the blog. That's thriveology.com. Or if you want, you can send me an email at podcast@thriveology.com and just let me know what you'd like to hear about. Until next time, I wish you the best in your thriving life.
You've been listening to the Thriveology Podcast. Thank you for listening. If you want more information, visit us at Thriveology.com or at ThriveologyMagazine.com. Remember that Thriveology is spelled T-H-R-I-V-E-O-L-O-G-Y. It's your life. Time to live it.